Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Melanie Cole's Health Radio. It's radio that's good for you.
When you think you need help and you need to talk to somebody, whether you've gone through something traumatic or have been struggling with symptoms of anxiety or depression, do you right away think of going to see a psychologist or a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist? Or do you think to yourself, well, maybe I'll just talk to my friends or maybe I can work it out on my own? Is it that stigma? Is there a reason you're not going to get therapy when you think you might need it? My guest today is Lou Cozzolino. He's a psychologist in Los Angeles, California, and the author of Why Therapy Works, Using Our Minds to Change Our Brains. So, Lou, welcome to the show. Let's talk about therapy. Why do you think people are hesitant to go see a therapist when they know they've got something they can't deal with?
Well, probably for two reasons. So the surface reason has to do with the stigma connected to it and other people thinking that there's something wrong with them or they're crazy or whatever. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of that. And I think that the other side of it is, though, is I think maybe I'm just speaking for myself, so this might be projection, but I think I've always feared that I was crazy. And one of the risks of going to therapy is having somebody confirm it.
Wow, what an interesting way to put it, because that's very true. And when people suffer from these anxiety disorders or any of these things, then they worry that people will think everything they've always thought about themselves, and that's part of the anxiety disorder to begin with. So maybe they need to look inside and say, well, and this therapist isn't going to judge. Now, what about the insurance situation? Because I know people that are hesitant, Lou, because they're afraid that if they go see a mental health counselor, that that's now on their record, as it were, and that now they're going to be looked at as somebody who went to see somebody for their mental health.
Right. I know. And I've had many clients over the years. They come in, they say, no records, I'll pay you cash. You've never met me before.
See,
you know?
That's what I'm saying.
So that's it, especially people who are, you know, in politics or in business, they have a concern. You know, on the other hand, there are populations of people where everybody's in therapy and not being in therapy is a stigma. So there are things that are shifting. And I work with a lot of immigrant populations to Los Angeles, people from the Middle East and from Asia. And those stigmas all exist in those communities as well. But the younger, you know, the younger generation, the people that are more influenced, I think, by American culture, are opening up to it and curious about it. And their biggest problem is hiding it from their parents, because their parents feel ashamed if their children go to therapy.
I've heard about that myself. Now, do you think that the world of therapy and psychotherapists has changed? Because back in the day, and they used to show it on sitcoms, the person would be talking their brains out, like I do every day, and the therapist would just be sitting there nodding their head and would never offer up real, tangible, usable advice. Is that still the way it is? Or does the therapist say, no, why don't you try this or do this or instead try this?
You know, there are all sorts of therapists, and there are camps of therapists that are the old stereotype, but I think proportionally they're really diminishing, and more therapists are becoming counselors in a sense, where they're being active. They're sort of like merging into life coaches, and so the boundary between psychotherapy and counseling and life coaching is all getting blurred. And also, as therapists, you know, so many schools have opened up to train therapists because it's a big business. And so now you can't really assume that a therapist is well-trained just because they've got a license. You really have to, you know, be an informed consumer and vet the therapist you're going to and see a few different people to see, you know, just to get at your intuition about whether they're smart, whether they're competent, whether they're sane themselves. Because mental health, just because you're a therapist doesn't mean you're sane. And so you really,
that's
as a
true.
Consumer, you have to be careful about who you put your psyche, you know, whose hands you put your psyche in.
Well, that's a good point. And I talk a lot about health advocacy on this show, Lou, on all my shows. And I think it's so important when you say to vet a therapist, what should you be looking for? And then also tell us how you therapists listen to everybody's problems all day without getting emotionally involved. I do cancer shows for cancer hospitals all over the country. And it's very hard for me not to look at the symptoms and say, oh, do I have this? Do I have this? So how do you not get involved? And what should we be looking for? Two questions
in one. I'll see if I can toggle back and forth. I think the you know, the basic things as far as where they went to school. Did they go to a you know, like an established school, or if it's a school you've never heard of before, you might want to, you know, think about that and maybe investigate the school, or maybe go to, you know, go to therapists that are, that have gone through established programming. There's programs, there's the American Psychological Association that, you know, sort of accredits programs. So that's a good thing to look at. You may want to look at where they had their internships, if they're, you know, if they're, those are credible places, like hospitals you know of, VA systems, say, things like that. So, but I think, you know, the bottom line, once you look at the someone's CV, the thing to really do is to just spend some time with them and get a sense of whether they seem like a good, solid, smart person. A therapist has to both be bright and they have to be human. And, you know, the problem is, you know, when people, if people wait until they're in crisis to go to therapy, it's really hard to have good judgment in those situations. So you become more vulnerable. It's much better to go to therapy when you feel like you're heading for the cliff as opposed to after you've gone over. So that would be one suggestion. As far as, you know, therapists being able to listen to things, what I found is really helpful is over the years I've studied, you know, a lot of neuroscience and evolution, social psychology. And so one of the things that keeps psychotherapy interesting to me after all of these decades of doing it is that I think of it as sort of a mutual research project with the client and myself. And so they're sharing themselves with me, and I'm sharing as much as I can my knowledge with them. And we work together to try to solve problems, as opposed to, you know, I'm the expert with all the answers. You know, I don't approach it that way. To me, it's a sort of a mutual exploration. I'm a guide, but we're in it together. And so it's important for me to be in touch with my own depression and anxiety and struggles in relationships, you know, all of those things. I have to be human and available and present.
But you don't talk about those things, really. I'm an exercise physiologist, Lou, so I've been kind of a counselor and therapist for 25 years with my clients. You know, I'm mm-hmm. working with people, and they're getting older, and they're in their 80s, and we talk about things together. They hear my stories, and I hear their stories, and they ask me mm-hmm. about their problems, and I talk about mine, too. So is that the way therapy works as well? Do you ever talk about your things, or because they're paying you by the hour, you don't?
Well, I mean, the therapy, you know, the sort of an overarching rule is the therapy is not about me, it's about them. But because social connection is the primary lever both of relationship, and relationships is a lever of neuroplasticity, you know, secure connections and good connections with people stimulate the brain to grow and also downregulate stress hormones that inhibit the brain from learning. And so the quality of the relationship is the major lever of change in therapy, and all the research supports that. And so what I try to do is I'm open and transparent to the degree to which I think it helps the relationship. And I have to monitor the fact of whether I'm feeling like, okay, I'm telling the story for me now, you know. So I just have to be mindful of that and have a reason why I'm sharing a story, and not just go blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay. So I need to learn. I need to learn from you, because, you know, it's usually about me. And even if it's their session, it's definitely about me. Oh, come on. No, I'm a good trainer. In any case, we have about 30 seconds. Tell people, Lou, where they can find your book, more about you, and your best advice.
Oh, okay. The book is Why Therapy Works, and you can certainly get it on Amazon with all the other books I've written about psychotherapy, neuroscience, education. What I've tried to do is take my studies and consolidate them into a sort of a conversational overview of why therapy works. And, you know, my best advice is to read the book and get, it's like an owner's manual for your brain. And we all have a brain, and we all need to learn how to use it.
Absolutely. Why Therapy Works, using our minds to change our brains. The stigma of going to see a therapist is waning, and we're hoping that it wanes. And if you feel you've got anxiety or depression or some other disorder that you need to really talk to a professional, then seek one out, and hopefully you will get some help. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks for listening, and stay well.